Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. So today, Giving Tuesday, in my email in basket, I can't even tell you how many different emails I received when I woke up this morning from charities looking for contributions today. And I've given to three groups so far today. One was offering a triple that they had gotten people in advance, who any money that someone donated today would be not doubled but tripled, because they got one match and they got a second one. And so I'm all in on that. It's an organization I'm very familiar with. I gave money, and then I have this email from them. Thank you for your donation on Giving Tuesday! And so it's an opportunity where you share your generosity, and especially if you can share it in a way where you get doubled your money or tripled your money for a cause that you believe in. Wow. So here's the thing. Giving Tuesday, the whole month of December, this is the Super Bowl, World Series, NBA Championship, all of it, all in one, because charities get so much of their annual donations during the Christmas season. We just feel more generous, the holiday spirit. And this year, as we've been beaten down psychologically by coronavirus, people are going to feel, if they can afford it, even more in a spirit they want to give. And there are so many great causes and organizations. And because of coronavirus and the effects on people's incomes, donations are generally down at a time that the demand for the services many charities offer is way up. So when you give, if you can afford to give, if it's your thing to give, something that I talk about very much this time of year, be very, very cautious and careful who you give to. Because there are a lot of phony balonies out there, and they all slither out this time of year to con you with names similar to real charities, or just out-and-out frauds. So give first to organizations like I did today, the three that I gave to. Give to organizations that you have first-hand involvement or knowledge with. Two of the three I gave to, I've been board member in the past. So I knew what actually goes on there. I know what happens behind the curtain. And so I had direct knowledge that I was giving to places where the money would be very efficiently used for things I believe in. And if you're giving to an organization you don't have firsthand knowledge to, that's when I want you to take the extra steps to check them out and watch the name very closely. Because remember, a lot of the scamsters will solicit under a name similar to a real organization, and it may slip right past you. But on Clark.com, I have info about organizations that all they do is check out would-be charities or charities, and they'll also tell you, of every dollar you donate, how much actually goes to service delivery. What's stunning is how many supposedly legitimate charities spend as little as a penny or two of each dollar raised on the charitable work itself. The rest of it is siphoned off by insiders or overhead or fundraising costs. So you want organizations that when you deliver a dollar to them, that delivers as close to a dollar of actual good works that you have donated to. And again, I appreciate so much the generosity of my fellow Americans who do so much to provide benefits to others, service to others, to improve our society, and not wait for someone else to do it or not expect government to do it. It's time for your questions for me that you posted at clark.com/ask. Producers Kim and Joel take turns. And Kim, you're up.
All right. First up today is Milton in Ohio. And Milton says, what leverage do I lose as a consumer by freezing my credit? Based on what Clark preaches, I would like to follow his direction, but I don't want to lose my ability to use credit cards normally.
So it makes no difference with the credit you already have. So the credit you have continues just as it's been. The thing that can be a hassle is a lot of people like these instant credit offers that you will see bandied about when you go into a store, and you can't do those with your credit frozen. You'd actually have to go home, get on your computer, your laptop, thaw your credit with one, two, or three bureaus. It's hopefully only one, but if you don't know who they draw on, you have to temporarily thaw all three. That's free to do. Takes about, I had to do it recently, it took me about 4 or 5 minutes to thaw all three. And then right after you complete that application for credit, your credit goes back frozen. Typically you'll thaw it for like a day or two and then it goes back frozen. So it's a slight inconvenience, but what it does is it prevents the major hassle you have if your credit is not frozen and a criminal gets to have fun at your expense pretending to be you and applying for credit as if they are you. Joel?
Clark, Mark in Georgia says, knowing the vaccine is on its way and that we expect it to be widely available in the April-May timeframe, it would seem that summer 2021 travel is a real possibility. What's your best advice on traveling outside of the U.S. in summer 2021? And should I look for deals and consider booking now?
I have spent so much time thinking about this, I can't even begin to tell you. Because as you may know, I love travel. And I've been so tempted by the deals that have come up recently for international travel and been thinking about whether I would book for next summer. So you think about the vaccine. It's not just a matter of getting sufficient penetration with the vaccine in the United States. And I want to talk more about this later in this hour of the show. But it's also an unknown where you might want to go overseas, how far along they'll be with vaccinating people. And so you're talking about an earth with, what is 8 billion people, and everybody's got to have, with most of these, two shots, specifically spaced a certain amount of time apart. This is going to take a while. So I have passed on booking things for early next summer season. I've been noodling whether to book something for August of next year, and I'm still on the fence. So the answer to your question, which was really long-winded, is that if you can book travel that you later can postpone or cancel without penalty for travel next summer, and you find a great deal, go ahead and do it. But if you have to book and you don't have flexibility with what would happen if you later didn't feel right going, don't book. Kim?
Kevin in Idaho says, what does Clark recommend when it comes to buying gift cards for this holiday season? With so many businesses closing locations or closing completely, is it too risky? We bought some gift cards about a month ago for a very popular local chain restaurant and have now found out all of our local restaurants in this chain are permanently closed. What should we do?
Well, actually, I'm really sorry that you lost all that money on those gift cards. I just read a story in the Wall Street Journal that gift card sales, especially for restaurants, have collapsed because people are really worried that just as happened to you, that you'll buy the gift cards to either give as gifts or for yourself, that maybe you're on promotion, that you get so much extra dollars in spending versus what you pay, that right now, even well-established restaurants are going out of business. So this is a high-risk venture, buying gift cards. You may remember back in the spring, there was a national campaign for people to buy gift cards for restaurants just to try to help them keep their doors open. And people knew they were spending money on these that they may in fact lose. And it sadly has turned out that way, that a lot of the restaurants people bought them for have now gone out of business. So it is something that is too high risk to do, even for established chains, unless you're doing it specifically as an act of kindness to try to help that restaurant survive. And I should say retailers, a lot of them are very unstable right now. And even with retailers, it's a good idea not to buy gift cards this year. Joel?
Clark John in Utah says, you mentioned to a caller who was retired but under the age of 72 that he should wait to start taking money from his 401ks and traditional IRAs until he's required to do so by the RMD rule. Your answer seemed odd to me, though. Aren't you better off in retirement taking some money each year from your pre-tax accounts and working the pre-tax balance down slowly to reduce the amount you're forced to take at age 72? A large RMD could impact your taxes as well as your Medicare payments.
Very well thought out and very true, and it does depend on an individual situation. What I get concerned about, and one of the advantages of being able to wait on required minimum distributions till you're 72, is I don't want you to outlive your money. You're looking at it from the other perspective, that you'd have so much money sitting there at 72 that every year the amount you had to pull out would cause you income tax bracket problem and the rest. These are good problems to have that you're concerned about. So if you have really, really hefty amounts of money in pre-tax accounts, then by all means, start your withdrawals from 401ks, IRAs, traditional IRAs, things like that, earlier than age 72, so that you can reduce the amount that has to be pulled out each year.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Jason joins us on the Clark Howard Show. And Jason, you are somebody who loves to save money.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, Clark. And thanks so much for taking my call. It's an honor. I've got about probably 25 years before I'll retire. So I've got some time. And I'm trying to figure out what my next step is. I've got right now about $100,000 parked in a 401k from a previous employer. I can't really do anything with it, though. It's kind of tricky because I still work for them per diem. So they said I can't roll it over into anything. So I'm just sort of letting that sit there right now. With my current employer that I've been with for the last couple of years, I've got a maxed out 401k, and I just did a separate after-tax Roth that I fully funded this year, and I plan to do the same next year.
Wait. This is amazing. So you're saving, so the max now is, what, 19-something?
Yeah, I believe it's 19.5, and I guess there's unofficially word that it's supposed to be 20,000 come next year.
This is really great. I think it's going to be 19.5 next year.
Okay.
As best I know for 21. But that's really great that you're saving the max. If you're saving that kind of money, are you anywhere close to being in danger of being income ineligible to do the Roth IRA you're doing?
So I worked quite a bit of overtime last year, and I almost hit the limit. I was under by about $6,000 or $7,000, so I was able to fully fund the Roth for this year. And I don't think I'll be working quite that much next year, so I should be able to fully fund it come the turn of the year as well. So I'm looking for what to do just beyond that. Right now, I don't have a high deductible healthcare plan, but I am eligible for one, so I could cut over to that and then take advantage of an HSA.
How good's your health?
I would say very good at this point. I don't really have any health problems. I don't anticipate anything in the near future.
So that's a brilliant question and a brilliant idea to go into a health plan with the employer that makes you HSA eligible. And then the whole idea to make an HSA really, really work for you is you fund it where you put it aside as like a long-term investment that you're then not going to spend on out-of-pocket medical bills that you'd have each year. I mean, the way you obviously live on so much less than what you make, you should be able to do that. So you could open an HSA account with a place like Fidelity is the biggest of the providers that offers really good choices for investing money that goes into an HSA. And it just means that when you do need medical care in order to be an HSA eligible, you're responsible for a lot of the money each year till the plan takes over. You're one of those people who's perfectly positioned to do that. And then you get the upfront tax benefit of funding the HSA, you get the tax-free growth in it, and then way down the road, typically in retirement, when you start using the money for out-of-pocket medical, the money is spent tax-free as well. So that is a brilliant place for you to put additional money. And then beyond that, if you want to keep saving more and more money, the next thing to do would be to do a traditional investment account with one of the low-cost investment houses where you can put money into index funds or exchange-traded funds that have very little tax due each year and very favorable tax when you'd ultimately sell them. And you're going to be on the ultimate easy street with the way you handle your money. Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about your empowerment with knowledge so you can keep more of what you have. So the stock market in November had an unbelievable run. Values are at the stratosphere. And people had almost euphoria after the election was over and the coronavirus looks like we've got great news coming in 21 with the vaccines. Now, three of them approved. There are others in the pipeline. And so people feel an optimism that starts to part the really, really dark clouds that we've felt since March. I mean, you know, you talk to mental health professionals and they'll tell you that people have had a really, really hard time emotionally, psychologically, mentally, depression, anxiety, all those things with coronavirus. And knowing that these vaccines are coming has been a booster shot for people's confidence. Obviously, the investment sector stocks that were in the toilet, cruise lines. I mean, man, the shares of cruise lines rocketed up. Airlines have benefited from it. Anything in the travel-related field, because there will be so much pent-up demand to do things like that once we're on the other side of coronavirus, and the vaccine's going to get that done. So there's already been, by the guesses of some economists, an increase in people's desire to spend, who've been hoarding cash. I mean, this is one of the great ironies of what's known as the K economy. We have, tens of millions of people who've suffered enormous economic dislocation this year, than others who've kept their jobs, but have spent a lot less money. And so there's more cash on the sidelines, more cash in savings accounts than has ever been. And so as people who have money feel more confident, they're likely to spend it, and that is going to help an economic recovery. In the meantime, as the infectious disease experts say, we're going to have a tough time health-wise with coronavirus for the next few months because, you know, the cavalry hadn't even mounted its horses yet. It's coming, and the government's about to issue the protocol of priorities of who gets the vaccines first. And then we're going to have to see how large a number of Americans get the vaccine in order to stamp out this horrific death rate we're having in the United States from coronavirus. But the reality is, 21, at some point, we're going to feel the ability to have a real exhale. I mean, feel like this thing that's been hanging over us will lift, and the economy will certainly benefit along with our health. So it's been a rough last 9 months. And we have months to go before it's all clear. But what's great now is we can see that, and we're going to feel it economically as well. And I used to travel constantly. I've not been on a plane since the first week of March. And I know other people are like, let me worry. And they've been flying. Not me. And I miss it. And so once the all clear comes, like so many other people, I will probably do more of that kind of stuff than I did before. So the good news is the people who've suffered economically are so heavily concentrated in the fields that have lost jobs, those are going to come back. The people who've kept their jobs have been saving money at rates that makes us more like other countries that we're never like, because we in America have always had the developed world's worst savings rate. But not this year. And of the few things you could point to that have been a good result of coronavirus, and there haven't been a lot, the amount that people are underspending what they make has been really great. And that money is fuel for restoring economic activity as coronavirus lifts at some point in 21. It's time for your questions. You posted for me at clark.com/ask. Producers Kim and Joel take turns. And I don't remember whose turn it is. Sorry.
That's okay. It would be mine. And this is from Mike in Michigan. Mike says, is it wiser to buy a 2020 or a 2021 model year four-wheel drive pickup?
So the answer to that depends on a few factors. Factor number one, that's core and key to the answer about whether you buy the 20 or 21 is principally based on how long you'll keep this vehicle. If you'll keep the vehicle 6 years or longer, absolutely buy the 2020. if you will keep the vehicle 4 years or less, then buy the 21. And if you're 5 years, it's awesome. The reason is that that one model year causes a big drop in the resale value of the vehicle. But you get a better deal buying a 20 versus a 21. Typically, can be a significant deal. But the real benefit comes buying the what would be considered to be the last model year. If you keep the vehicle a long enough time, then it's a win-win for you. The other factor is if there's important equipment on it, like if you care about safety and there's all kinds of safety gizmos and gadgets on a 21 that aren't on a 20, that might be a reason to buy a 21. But most of the time, I just look at it strictly from the dollars and cents and how long your cycle of ownership is. Joel?
Clark, Donnie in Oklahoma says, what's the best company to use for consolidation of debt from credit cards? We have approximately $35,000 split between three different credit cards. We're making payments of approximately $1,000 per month for all three. We pay more than the minimum payment, but it seems like we just aren't making much progress. So where do we go?
Yeah, so what you're paying about 3% of the balance each month. The interest rates on credit cards are so high that you're not going to be able to really make any progress. So I want to suggest something. Consolidation loans generally are a ripoff, but there has been an opportunity with peer-to-peer lending with Lending Club and Prosper that are both changing their models of where they get their money, but they still make consumer loans, personal loans, like for people trying to move credit card debt to a lower interest rate that could lower your rate enough, and then you're making a set monthly payment with a specific pay down date. If your credit score is good enough and you can lower the interest rate enough, Lending Club and Prosper both would be really good potential opportunities for you. If you're not going to get enough lower interest rate that it would really bend the curve that the payments you make would get you to where you start seeing balances really drop, then that means you need to go visit a credit counselor at the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, nfcc.org, where they can work up a budget with you, and if necessary, they can negotiate payment plans with these credit cards so that you can see your way to pay them off typically in 3 or 4 years, which is what you want to be about instead of just throwing money at the problem and the problem not getting any better. Kim?
Alex in Washington says, years ago, Clark seemed to like the Vanguard Star Fund an awful lot, and he doesn't talk about it anymore. Does he still recommend this fund for a Roth IRA?
So I'm so glad that you're asking this question, because the Star Fund was a great go-to specifically for Roth IRAs before target retirement funds became really, really sophisticated. And target retirement funds are such a good choice, particularly with the low-cost providers, especially with Fidelity and Vanguard. And so doing the target retirement fund in a Roth or even a traditional IRA is now a superior choice to something like the Star Fund. Star Fund was kind of ahead of its time and still has great value for somebody opening an investment account with not a lot of money to put in it. But as a go-to, like I used to have it, as just a one-stop shop for retirement accounts, it's not that anymore, because these other alternatives that automatically change the mix of investments as you age are a superior alternative. Joel?
Clark, Deanne in Georgia says, my husband passed away due to COVID-19 in October of this year.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
She says, our underage son will receive Social Security support until he graduates from high school in May of 2022. By the time the benefit runs out, he should receive around $40,000 total. I'd like to find a low-cost investment account to park the money in for the years until he's finished college and is ready for a down payment on a home. Where do you suggest?
So this is not the easiest question to answer. What I think I would do, and there is no perfect answer to this, but what I would do in this case is I'd take half the money and put it into a total stock market index fund. And the other half of the money put into a simple savings account with an online bank. Doing that mix, where traditionally I would have said, go into something known as a balance fund, where the money is 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds. But bonds are a dicey thing for the number of years you're talking about till likely to buy a house. So you lower risk, but still get a nice goose of return if half the money is in a total stock market index fund. And Fidelity, they have the zero version where you pay no commissions and no ongoing fees. The other half in savings account, in a simple savings account, it lowers the risk but gives the opportunity for decent returns over the number of years till this money would actually be used for the down payment on the house. And that is general advice, just the best idea I can think of in this case. And again, I'm sorry about your loss. Tim is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Clark.
So, Tim, you're moving to Indianapolis.
We are. And hey, at first I want to give a shout out to your Clark Deals team. They saved me some money this weekend, and my wife got some Kohl's cash that we would not have gotten already.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, the deals this year have been so much more difficult to track and let people know about. And I'm so proud of our Clark Deals team that have been working literally 24-hour shifts to make sure people have the best information on the deals. And Indianapolis is a wonderful town. Had you ever spent much time in Indianapolis before you made the decision to move there?
Yeah, we've actually been in Indiana for about 15 years, but have been living in smaller towns, and recently got a job here, and we sold our house in October and are renting a home month to month. And I want to ask you kind of the impossible question to have a crystal ball on the real estate market. I know it's impossible, but this is just such a weird time. And just trying to, you know, we're trying to decide, you know, whether or not we should wait a little bit. We would like to purchase something by August of next summer for school purposes. But I'm hearing some experts say that there's going to be a correction soon because of foreclosure moratoriums going away and the vaccine. And others say the prices are going to keep going up because of low inventory and upcoming stimulus. And yeah, I'd love and would appreciate to hear your opinion and thoughts.
So I bet you know my first question for you. How long do you think you'll want to stay in the home that you would decide to buy, whatever point you buy it between now and August of 21?
Long term.
Long term means?
10 plus years.
Oh, don't even worry about any noise about the real estate market. Even if values are slightly inflated and there may be a minor correction in 21 or 22, there's not going to be any collapse barring some completely unanticipated event in the world. There's no conditions with housing today that lead to a picture of an impending doom or collapse. There's not a overhang of inventory like there was 15 years ago, so I wouldn't fret. And today, interest rates are so favorable that I would feel really comfortable buying, as long as you have been in Indianapolis long enough to figure out which area of the metro area you want to live in, or even drilling down to more specific neighborhoods. If you've got that figured out, school district, all that, go ahead and feel comfortable getting in the housing market anytime between now and August.
And Clark, do you think there's just not a lot available right now?
Sure.
Do you think it's going to get a little bit better come the springtime?
Impossible to predict in the short term.
Yeah.
You know, inventory levels, particularly at more moderate house point price points, have been extremely low. And so the inventory levels are so low that it's led in cases of houses selling for somewhat more than people even listed them for. So just know that locking in an ultra low interest rate with an ownership cycle of a minimum of a decade will cover a lot of issues that might exist with home prices being somewhat elevated, somewhat inflated. Don't worry about how you're going to sit in that house, even if you end up paying more than that house might be worth a year from now, because eventually the value of that ultra low interest rate is going to pay off very well for you. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.